Welcome to Talking Giants, boys and girls. It's officially draft month. I'm excited, and my name is Bobby Skinner, and I'm here with my co-host Justin Panic. Justin, we got a couple interviews done. We had License Plate Guy on Monday. We had Dan Duggan on last week, but now it's draft month. It's time for me and you to get down in the nitty-gritty. So on today's episode, we're going to be talking about the tight ends and the running backs, some lower-tier guys that could be targets for the Giants. We're going to review Dave Gettleman's 2013 draft class. We got Giants stories, but how are you doing, Justin, before we get rolling?
The drops have to stop, Justin.
I hate your drops so much.
I know you do. That's why I played it. That probably is the only drop I'm playing this entire episode. I'm making no promises. That's probably the last one because we have a lot to get to. This is a very busy month. It gives me anxiety because it is busy and I actually have to be on my game and I have to be coherent and speak English well. That makes me anxious, but I'm doing well. I'm excited. The New York Football Giants are hopefully going to be a football team that is improved 3 weeks from today. 3 weeks from today, the night that we're recording this, Thursday, April 2nd. I hope we're a better football team in 3 weeks.
I'm getting so freaking excited just thinking about it, baby. It's draft month. I'm so pumped right now, Justin.
Wait, but before we get to that, though,
I want to say thank you to the listeners.
Yeah, we need
listeners.
To give a little gratitude. Yes.
I said it before you did, so anyways, cut you off because I'm more thankful than you are. I will say thank you because we did challenge our listeners to help out with the St. Christopher's because of the softball game being canceled. And you guys did that. We raised over $500. We're going to do a contest. We have an unreleased Eli Manning t-shirt that is coming out on the anniversary of his drafting. So that'll be out. And
we do?
Topher Pete. Oh, yeah. I'm breaking news right now. Now, it's coming out on the anniversary of the draft. This is big business stuff, Justin. This is in the big John Boy Media business meetings that make me feel like I don't fit in.
I must have missed the email.
Well, yeah, you're not an executive like I am. Anyways, Topher Pete, our guy, he gave, I'm not going to say people's amounts because they probably don't want me to say those amounts, but he gave enough. He's going to be in that contest. Jack Corderano, he's going to be in it. He's another guy that we love. And other people gave, like Frank the Tank gave, Mr. Brownstone gave. I'm missing guys. I'm sorry. I know I'm missing people. I should have written them down, but I seriously want to thank you guys. We raised over $500, which, you know, it's not a ton, but you know what? How much is other podcasts giving? So I love our listeners. I appreciate what you guys are doing. We'll send out that kind of stuff. And also, I'm excited for this draft month, man. I think we want to give back to our listeners. Our listeners give back to us. Justin, let's get to 200 reviews by time the end of this draft month. How about that?
It's been
165 right now? So let's get to
160. 163 to be exact.
163. Let's get to 200 before this month is over, because I think we're going to be doing better coverage than freaking anybody.
I will celebrate and make a joke once we reach 169. So we have that to look forward to.
And Justin Penick will inject himself with coronavirus if we get the 200 by the end of the month.
Nope, that's debatable. That's debatable.
I've calmed down on the corona jokes because it's not funny anymore. I will say, do you think we're going to get to a point? It's not. And I'm actually taking it very seriously. A lot more serious than most people, honestly. That being said, Justin, do you think like a month from now, we're going to just be like, all right, let's just let people die because we need to go do things?
No. This is the second time that you've tried to bring up this theory of like cleansing. And
I'm not for it, but I just know human behavior. And I think people are going to get to a point. You're like, you know what? I don't care if I die. I'm going to live my life. The old people are doing that. When I say old people, I don't say it in a negative way, but I see a lot of elderly people and they are not changing much from their lifestyle, at least down here in Florida.
If you bring this up one more time, I'm going to get very concerned as to like, okay, this dude actually like has a pattern of like thinking about this routinely. And then like you brought it up twice and you brought it up in two different ways. And both times you've defended yourself saying, oh, I don't think this. But if you bring it up for a third time, then I'm going to get concerned.
Listen, I study human behavior, Justin. I study it.
Anyways, you do.
I majored in it. All right. Now, we got some news to get to before we do this 2013 class breakdown. The Giants signed Pro Bowl long snapper Casey Kreider. He's played in the NFL for 4 years. He was with Riley Dixon for 2 years in Denver. He went to a Pro Bowl. I mean, Justin, we are going to have the best special teams of all time. And we got Casey Kreider. We got Riley Dixon. We got Nate Ebner. Granted, the funny thing is the kicker, Aldrick Rosas, is the one we're worried about.
And we have a head coach who is arguably one of the best special teams gurus in the entire league. So
yeah, as go well as Thomas teams. McGahee is the special teams coordinator. So we're gonna be a very special team, if you know what I mean.
Apparently Denver fans were very angry that we poached him.
He's a good dude. Everyone likes him. He's a teacher. So you know what? That's a big thing for this team. A lot of teachers.
Sports radio, here we go. It's a big thing for this team. We got to get the teachers.
Colt McCoy basically said that he's going to be a coach after this, so he's doing the Jason Garrett route. So love he's it. Here to learn how to be a coach from Jason Garrett, so that's just awesome. Alex Tanney, he's basically a coach in the film room. A lot of teachers on this team, Justin.
I would like to win, too. All right, no. I'm happy. I don't want to get angry. What do we got next?
Don't get angry. Just laugh at it. It's just funny off-season talking points.
We signed a long snapper, Pro Bowl, Riley Dixon, bromance. Great. What do we got next?
Yeah, I did long snapper film. That was fun.
You did.
Now, I want to do this. We're going to evaluate through the next couple of weeks. We're going to evaluate. Everyone knows, if you're listening to this, you already have your opinion on the 2018 draft class and the 2019 draft class. It's been talked about it now. You have your opinion on them. But I think, and myself included, don't really have the greatest knowledge of his Carolina talk. So I figured, Justin, we'll go, we're not going to go crazy in depth, but I figure we go kind of quickly through each of Dave Gettleman's Carolina draft classes. So are you excited?
I want to make a note, and I want to put an asterisk on this kind of segment that we're going to do, because it's a little irresponsible. It's a little irresponsible. And I just thought of this because we don't fully know, unless Bobby and I didn't do enough research to fully know the state of the 2013 Carolina Panthers post free agency and before the draft, to know, Carolina really needed this, but then Dave Gettleman went and did that. The only thing that I do know from the 2013 draft is that people were mad afterwards that Dave Gettleman did not acknowledge the wide receiver spot. That's the only thing I know. But just know with this exercise, we are evaluating, Dave Gettleman's drafts in Carolina as blind Giants fans who did not know the current state of that roster. We knew that Luke Kuechly and Cam Newton were there, and that's about it.
And we know for sure that the 2013 through 15, you don't want to give him the full credit because there's a lot of those guys on that roster, and especially the star players were there before Gettleman got them, but they didn't stop him from going 15-1 into the Super Bowl. So let's start off with 2013, Dave Gettleman's first draft pick as a GM, his first one out of Utah, and no other position than defensive tackle, Star Lotulelei out of Utah.
That's fun. That's a fun
Justin,
name.
He made the all-rookie team. He got a five-year, $50 million contract from the Buffalo Bills, whose coach was the defensive coordinator for that Panthers team, Sean McDermott. So there's a familiarity thing, and they, he's still there. He doesn't have great stats, but he is the definition of a guy who was just a run stuffer. And I know that keys off a lot of Dave Gettleman jokes at 14th overall. So he's a good player. He's not a bad player. He's a good player. And I'm going to do this for the first round picks because it's more relevant. The third, fourth round is kind of more of a crapshoot. I went the five picks after Star Lotulelei. The five picks after were Kenny Vaccaro, the safety, who's a pretty good safety, but you don't have Kenny Vaccaro's on your team and you're not jumping for joy for him. EJ Manuel to the Bills. That was a disaster. Even Jimbo Fisher of Florida State was telling people, hey, don't do this. And the Bills did it. Jarvis Jones, the pass rusher out of Georgia who went to the Steelers. Remember him? He probably was maybe the bust of this first round if you don't include EJ. Actually, even more than Manuel. Jarvis Jones is a huge bust. Eric Reed went to the 49ers, who's a really good safety. A lot of people hate him, but he is a really good safety. And then our own Justin Pugh, Justin.
Oh, funny. Funny little pun there you did with the two Justins. But yeah.
I didn't even plan to do that. I was just finishing off.
You're just naturally such a funny person. Star Lotulelei, how do you like it? I got it right.
I did not look up the pronunciations.
You didn't?
Lotulelei.
That's how we're going to pronounce it on Talking Giants, okay?
Just wait until the fourth round.
Yeah. Oh,
go ahead. Great. Sorry.
So I found this Carolina Huddle blog, and they evaluated the 2013 draft in 2016 with this blog. So I thought it was actually a pretty good blog. And they evaluated Lotulelei, or our buddy Star. They evaluated him as a guy that ate up space, but he did it at an elite level. And that's basically it. And I think the value of this first round pick from 2013 is not as valuable and is not as good if Dave Gettleman didn't get the second round pick right. How do you like that transition? Great radio.
Yeah, the next pick is, the jokes are just, people are going to have fun with this. The next pick, and when I put this out, is defensive tackle out of Purdue, Kawan Short. So his first two picks were defensive tackles, which I know people are just writing the jokes right now. But Kawan Short was really good. He, in that 2015 Super Bowl season, he was second team all pro. He had 11 sacks, 16 tackles for a loss. You know, Pro Bowl that year. He's got 164 career tackles, 32 and a half sacks. He's a really good defensive tackle. I mean, he got a 5-year, $80 million contract from Carolina. Kawan Short's a really good player. And just flash-wise, he's better than Star Lotulelei.
Well, stat-wise, he's better than our buddy Star. But I do really think that those two complemented each other very, very well, especially as they developed.
Star is a star, but Short, he just comes up a little short. All right, sorry. Go ahead.
His nickname with Carolina fans, recognized with Panthers fans, is KK Short, and I love that. Like KK. I hate KK as a response to a text message, but I guess as a name, it's fun. So KK Short.
Here, you want to know something? There was, and they closed down this past year, there was a blind or curtain company in Cocoa Beach, where I live,
mm-hmm.
and I have the picture. If you want me to, I'll send it to you. It was Kelly's Custom Curtains, but Ooh. Because her name was Kelly, she changed the custom, the C and the C in custom and curtain to K. So the initials were KKK.
No,
ask me. I want to share this because I think it's so like unbelievably like dumb and funny.
Yep, it's not where you want to be. But Kawan Short and our buddy Star complemented each other very, very well. And I think if you had, like, Kawan Short without Star, you grade this 2013 draft kind of bad. And if you have Star without Kawan Short, same thing, you grade it bad. Then Star is just a guy who's a run stopper and he does nothing else. He's not really seen as a guy that's going to eat space. But because these guys played together and they complemented each other so well, it led to a 2015, you know, run where Carolina went on, especially on that defense side of the ball. Those were the hallmarks of that defensive line. And those kind of guys back-to-back, it seemed to work for that team. It seemed to work. And I'm saying this biting my tongue, being somewhat of a Dave Gettleman critic, but just trying to understand how the game of football works. And if those two guys can complement each other, just like we've been on this podcast saying how good of a player Leonard Williams is. If I say that this was irresponsible to pick these defensive tackles back to back because of just my natural bias against Dave Gettleman, then I also have to eat crow on Leonard Williams. And I'm not willing to do that. So I'm trying to stay consistent.
Right. So now the next one, fourth round pick, 108th overall, Edmund Kugbila, a guard out of Valdosta State. He never played. So that's a really bad pick. I get it's the fourth round, but when you draft a guard in the fourth round, you expect him to at least stay on the team. He never really stayed on the team. He was in the league for 1 year, never got any snaps. So obviously that's a really bad pick. I'm not going to get on anybody for like a fourth round pick not panning out. But you want a guy to at least have enough talent to where he got a chance, and he just never got a shot.
And this is also a rare time where Dave Gettleman has taken a guy with possibly an injury history, and Dave Gettleman has never, at least his time with the Giants, has never found himself in trouble with guys that, A, have an injury history, or B, have been injury prone with the Giants that he's taken or he's signed. So give credit to Dave Gettleman in that regard, where this has not been a problem. Unlike Jerry Reese. Jerry Reese found guys that got hurt all the time.
All right, next on the list, fifth round pick, 148th overall, linebacker AJ Klein. You probably know him better with the Saints. But he's always been a good like number three, number two inside linebacker. He usually gets around like 60% of the snaps. on defense throughout like his career. In that 2015 year, he had 55 tackles, an interception, and 7 tackles for a loss on 60% of those snaps. Got a career total of 339 tackles, 34 tackles for loss, 3 interceptions, 10.5 sacks, which is pretty good for a guy who's not playing every down. The Saints gave him a 3-year, $15 million deal. And then this pass offseason, the Bills, who loved those Panthers from that run, gave him a 3-year, $18 million deal. So he's gotten 2 decent contracts. And AJ Klein, I've watched him play with the Saints a little bit. He's pretty good. He's nothing special, but for a fifth round pick, he's definitely a win for me.
Yeah, Luke Kuechly missed several games in 2015 due to a concussion, and that is when AJ Klein was really able to step in and start for maybe possibly one of the first times. And he, according to this Carolina Huddle blog, he filled in pretty well. So for a fifth round pick, if a guy has been in the league this long, from 2013 and we're approaching 2020, if a guy's been in the league this long and he's been able to serve as quality number two, number three guy, good pick.
Right. All right, next on the list, there's a guy I loved at watching in college out of Oregon. 6th-round pick, and this is the last one, which is funny that Dave Gettleman, the 2 teams he's taken over, he only has 5 draft picks in this in his first draft. 6th-round pick, 182 overall, Kenyon Barner, who's got a career. He didn't play last year, but he played almost every year up until last year. He has a career of 100 carries, 416 yards, 3 touchdowns, 28 carries, 152 yards. He only was with Carolina for 1 year, which, Justin, I'll be surprised. I'm really surprised that this guy didn't start for a long time, because I've been told that you just get running backs in the 6th round and they're automatically good.
I feel like that was a slight towards me, even though I've never said that. I feel like that was a slight towards me.
Well, we started this morning off, just a full disclaimer of me and you just yelling at each other.
That is true.
And it's like, dude, like just infuriated with each other. So I'm glad that we're finishing off the day laughing about what we were mad at each other for.
Yeah. apparently Barner was a guy that like fumbled a couple times in the preseason. And if you want to get in Ron Rivera's doghouse, you fumble. So after those 2 fumbles that this guy had during the preseason, it was enough for this Carolina Huddle blog to just totally dismiss him as a player, which I find that to be such like an LOL moment as a person that was just reading this blog as an outsider.
All right. So, I mean, now the part that we hate doing is like, what are your overall thoughts on this draft?
I thought you were going to do it. I thought you were going to say,
no, I can't do grades because I'll be super inconsistent. I'll just be making up on the fly. I can't do it. I would say pretty good. Star Lotu Lele, Kawan Short, good players. The 4th round pick, I get that it's a 4th round pick, but the fact that guy never even got a shot does bother me. AJ Klein, I like that pick. And then Kenyon Barner, like you said, the fumbles like kind of, I guess, got him in the doghouse with Rivera. But he's always been like a guy with talent, and I like a guy who was really good in college, giving him a flyer. So I would call it pretty good is basically what I'm saying. I'm not jumping to the moon for it, but I like that draft.
The articles that were coming out after the 2013 draft is, why didn't Dave Gettleman acknowledge the wide receiver position? Who is Cam Newton going to throw the ball to? If you look, hindsight's 2020. If you look at, these first two rounds, they make the draft. Like if you look at guys that were quality starting players, his 4th round was a miss. It was a bust. But we're not going to get too mad at that. But if you look everywhere else, the 5th and the 6th round pick, he didn't have that many picks, like you said. They're not really quality starting players. So where Gettleman made his money this draft was with Star, and it was with Kawan Short. And those two guys were a hallmark of that interior defensive line that for that 2015 run that they did have. They were integral, and you can't ignore that. So that is what makes the draft as a whole a win, because those two guys were able to complement each other so well.
Yeah, definitely. So, like I said, we're not going to give Dave Gettleman credit for getting that Panthers team to the Super Bowl, but he had 3 drafts that didn't stop him from getting there. So anyways, and we'll get in the next episode. We'll do 2014, then 15 and 16 and so on until we're done. All right, Justin, we're kind of strapped for time. Let's do Giants stories or Days of Our Giants or whatever we're calling. We need to put it up to a poll, honestly, we're doing. We need to make a decision on this.
No, we're not putting up to a poll because people like you better than me and they will pick Giant Stories and not
Days. Yeah, but our listeners are honest people. Okay.
You have a cult. There's times where they disagree with me. You have a little bit of a cult that follows you. Have you noticed that a little bit?
People like me. I consistently put out good stuff. If I stop putting out consistently good stuff, they won't like me. That's how it goes, Justin.
No, but you have the cult that whenever Dwayne Haskins is brought up, whenever Landon Collins is brought up, or whenever PFF is brought up, Bobby Skinner is thrown into the fire, and you are leading the charge. So do not deny this.
Yeah, we went off on Landon on a Tuesday. That was fun. I was honestly just having fun with it. I wasn't like mad at Landon for what he said. I was just having fun with it. I think he was doing the same, and then he blocked me. I just keep on. That's something we need from the listeners. What Redskins player should I try and get blocked by next? Norman's not on the team. I probably would have picked him next. All right, Justin. Giant stories. Keep on listening. Whatever.
Cue the music.
Golden Tate did a snake prank on his wife, scared the poop out of her, and then she took his PS4 controllers and wouldn't give them back until agreed to not do the prank anymore. And later on the week, they were flying kites. Dion Lewis was playing the board game Trouble. Leonard Williams was playing the board game Monopoly and doing spear fishing and ended up frying those fish. Levine Toilolo, who officially signed his contract, was making French toast. Darius Slayton was doing burnouts in his Dodge Charger. Caden Smith did a TikTok dance video. Drayvon, I forgot his last name, the guy from the XFL, I only wrote down Drayvon, was Askew working Henry. Out in the hood. And RJ McIntosh was fishing in a lake in Florida. Justin, board games are getting big again. Trouble, Monopoly, or another game that you, which one's your best? Candyland? I mean, what's your go-to board game?
I had such a boring childhood. I never played board games. Never.
Trouble is a great board game. I like seeing Dion Lewis do that. That was I was big on the Dion Lewis Trouble. I love that game.
I'm jealous of our boy Toilolo making waffles, posting it on his Instagram story.
French toast. I want to say something. Leonard Williams has like the best life on the West Coast. I mean, he's always like his house is so sick. He's always doing something fun. He lives right on the beach. Levine Toilolo. Leonard Williams, he just has an awesome life. And he's got he's literally at the moment is not signing a $16.7 million contract. That's how good his life is.
I guess he was a top draft pick, so he got a little bit of substantial money.
Homeboy lives the life. Darius Slayton doing burnouts spoke to me because I was a kid who grew up with my dad doing burnouts. We would blow the tires on things. They would hook up on our street. We'd hook up to our neighbor's truck and they'd hook up a tow strap to their hitches. And then they would pull each other and do the craziest of burnouts. I mean, I grew up on burnouts. And the more and more I see Darius Slayton stuff, the more and more I think I would get along with him.
Where was he doing it?
I'm just like in his driveway.
That's awesome.
Here's a burnout trick. Put bleach on your tires, and it will be a lot smokier.
Thanks, Bobby Skinner.
It's true.
I'll do that on my Dodge Avenger.
I got a really good burnout video on my Instagram. Let me see if I can pull it up real quick. And then while I'm pulling it up, the next part of the show is like we said before. We're starting our draft previews, which means we're starting today with tight ends and running backs because it's two positions that are not of need. So we're going late round guys. Some guys might not even get drafted, but it's guys that we could see being a decent fit for the Giants. Now, there's going to be some more negative things to say because these guys are a little lower on the totem pole. But nonetheless, it's fun. I have a lot of fun doing it, and I am close to finding this burnout video. Justin, any words before we kick it over?
Be well. Thanks for listening. Leave a 5-star review on the Apple Podcast app and let us know why you love us, and we'll love you right back. Get us to 169 ratings, and I'll make a joke. Bobby, have you found the video?
Oh, I know it. It's on my brother's Instagram. Here, I got it.
We can't even see it.
Maybe you can hear it. This car is not moving. So much smoke. All right.
Let's kick it off to the tight ends and running backs.
That was so worth it. Thank you.
Come on, pay attention in there. Let's go. We got a beautiful day. Work. Play fast. Play fast. Whoa. Ah.
All right, let's take a look at these draft prospects. Justin, I'm like really giddy right now. This is the first ones we're doing of the season. Been looking forward to this for a while. I'm really giddy, and we're going to talk about some I almost called them talking ends, tight ends and running backs.
It's actually funny. Somebody said recently, it was Toy Lolo, and he was on the conference call this week, and he said, the more tight ends on the field, the better. That exact quote. And the five-year-old in me giggled because I'm an immature person.
That's true. That is true. But no, we figured we'd start with tight ends and running backs because it is not a position of need.
Right.
And because of that, we are doing late round guys. I mean, some of these guys might not even be drafted. That being said, Justin, I want to start off with a guy who probably will be drafted and probably in the fourth, fifth round range. Out of Florida Atlantic University, so close to home, so I had to talk about him. 6'5", 243 pounds. And that's the FAU tight end Harrison Bryant. He ran a 4.73 40. He had a 32.5-inch vertical jump and 13 bench press reps at the combine. So nothing to be like too crazy about. But just remember the tight end combine numbers. I think the fastest one was like a 4.5. And then the second one was like a 4.66 or something like that, a 4.65. So when you see 4.73, it's actually pretty good. Second was a 4.66. Justin, I went and watched a couple of his games. I went and watched him again. He played against Ohio State, and they were obviously just unbelievably outmatched. But he looked like he belonged on that field with that team. I mean, he finishes he finds the holes and zones, and that is so much more valuable than speed when it comes to the tight end position. Can you see where that hole is going to be in the zone? You time it, and you're on the same page with your quarterback to find that. He does that. And when he was thrown passes that were contested, I mean, he had some wild catches, some like Randy Moss-type catches. And he would always come down with the ball, so he had great hands in traffic. He runs like a wild man when he does have the ball, you know. And I think part of that was he realized he was the only guy for FAU, so like every time he had the ball, he was trying to make the most out of it. He takes good angles in blocking. He's not great on like one-on-one on the edge. I really like this guy. I don't think he's going to be an option for the Giants, but I mean, he had 65 catches, 1,004 yards and 7 touchdowns in 2019, which was 15.4 yards per catch, which is really good for a guy that was going to be the focal point of every defense that played them every week, Justin.
He had a little bit of a drop issue, had a total of 8. A great catch rate, however, despite, you know, 8 drops is not significant, but it's one of the higher amounts of the top tight ends. Great catch rate. I think why you're disappointed that he had a disappointing combine is because evaluators wanted to see him make up for his smaller wingspan. Since he had a little bit of a smaller wingspan, you wanted to see maybe some of his 40 numbers and some of his speed numbers make up for that, and it doesn't necessarily do that. That doesn't mean he's a bad player, though, and Bobby and I are kind of believers on this podcast where you don't want to take the measurements of the combine too seriously. He definitely has more of a potential as a receiver than a blocker, like Bobby said, but those receiving abilities, and they're natural to him, it kind of makes him a top 5 tight end in this class, in my opinion.
Yeah, he's going to be a starter, and he's going to be a good starter for a team. So I like Harrison Bryant out of FAU. Justin, who is the first tight end on your list?
All right, Bobby, before I start, one of the things that I kind of want to introduce and one of the things that I kind of want to preface is the way that I have my notes and the way that I'm going to be evaluating players throughout this entire draft class and throughout this entire month is I'm going to be going through plus, things that players are absolutely fantastic at, they excel at the most, plus things that players are good or average or solid at, and then the minus part is the things that players either need to improve on or things that I just flat out don't like about the player, and then I'll give like an overall kind of premise too. So that's how I'm going to kind of go through the entire month. That's my entire format of how I write notes and how I'll talk about players. But my first tight end is going to be Josiah DeGuara, tight end out of Cincinnati, 6'3", 240 pounds. He was a 2-year starter, had his best season this year in 2019, where he started 13 games, 39 catches, 504 receiving yards, for an average of 12.9 yards per reception with 7 total touchdowns. So in my plus-plus category, I'm saying that Josiah DeGuara should not be ranked as low as he is on certain websites just because he did not statistically put up huge numbers. He did lead all tight ends in the bench press at the combine with 25, and this strength inevitably shows up on tape. He did a great job sealing the edge in the run game and was impressive overall as a run blocker. He has good burst off the line of scrimmage, which allows him to be the man who gets his hands on the defender first. Also, something significant which shows up on tape when he's running routes is the fact that he utilizes a head fake pretty well when running certain routes, especially when he's running out of the slot. So now we're going to move towards my plus category. He's a smooth, crisp route runner. Nothing flashy or extravagant, but a lot of his big plays and TDs, they did come from corner routes to the left sideline. That's where a lot of his touchdowns come from. That's where a lot of his big plays come from. So you want to see him utilize the route tree a little bit more, but those corner routes, that's where he did make his money. Nothing flashy, but nothing extravagant. So overall, as a tight end, he lined up with his hand both in the ground and out wide, and he was not a liability at either spot. So the areas where I think he needs to work on and the areas that I don't like about his game, he needs to work on his awareness as a blocker. There were times where he struggled to put a hat on a helmet and he looked silly. So in whatever system that he would be put in, he'll have to work on the mental aspects of the game. It's something that I do think that he can improve on. Is probably not going to give you much in the broken tackles category as well, but he can certainly move. He's very much a rumbler. I want to see a little bit more of a mean streak for him as a blocker. He has that strength. You know, we said, 25 bench press reps. He has the strength, but I'd love for him to finish his blocks more. He's going to need to do that at the pro level where guys are inevitably bigger and stronger. So overall, one of the most underrated tight ends in the class. He actually is one of these lower tier guys that has the potential to grow into a possible starter and not just a special teamer or a number two guy. The combo of power and athleticism he offers, it is an awesome combo.
Yeah, he's at 6'2", which you really don't see with the tight end position anymore. I mean, it used to be that like 6'2", 6'3", was what tight ends were. Seeing him there is like, okay. Next on my list, Justin, and I really like this guy, and he might be go undrafted, I don't know, but I really like what this guy puts down. Dalton Keene, out of Virginia Tech. He's 6'4", 253 pounds. At the combine, he ran a 4.7140, a 34-inch vertical jump, 21 bench press reps, and a 7.07 three-cone drill. He's an H-back, and what that means is he's a hybrid. He plays between tight end and fullback, and he does a good job of both, Justin. Like, he was fun to watch. So when he is blocking, he gets really good and low. He can be a lead blocker. Like, he's very good as a lead blocker, as a fullback in the hole. Like, he knows where to go. He doesn't have great play strength, but he puts everything into it. Like, there's sometimes where he'll lean a little too much, but when he doesn't get in trouble for leaning too much, he just buries dudes. Like, I'll show some stuff. I mean, when he's a lead blocker, he can bury dudes. He's, like I said, he's very smart in the hole. He's got decent receiving skills and with a really nice motor when he has the ball. The thing is, a lot of his catches and especially his touchdowns, Justin, were very scheme related. He was wide open. Now, I can't get mad at a guy for doing his job and being open, but it wasn't like he just went out and made some awesome play. It was a lot of scheme stuff. But when he has the ball in his hands, he plays like a madman. It's just, and I love that kind of stuff. I like that gritty kind of stuff. And Justin, I know Elijah Penny was re-signed. I'm not the biggest Elijah Penny guy. If Dalton Keene is available as an undrafted free agent or a seventh round pick, which I believe we have four of this year, I would love taking a flyer on this guy. I think he's got a lot of potential, and he just seems like one of those guys who is always going to figure out. You know who he reminded me of?
Who do you remind you of?
You remember the old Rutgers fullback who played in front of Ray Rice?
I worked out with him, Brian Leonard.
Brian Leonard. He reminds me of Brian Leonard a lot. So that doesn't, you hear Brian Leonard and you're not like, oh, that's a great comparison. He's going to be horrible in the NFL. I really like that. He's got good running ability. He's good in the hole. Like I said, he's not going to like just dominate guys blocking wise. But if he gets his hands on you and you don't dump him, if he leans too much, he'll bury guys. So if he could keep his head up a little bit, he can be a real deal fullback who actually has receiving skills as well. I mean, he had some nice catches too. So as much as a lot of the stuff was schemed, he had some nice catches. In 2019, he had 21 catches, 240 yards, and 5 touchdowns, 3 of which were against Miami. So this Dalton Keene guy, I think out of this position group, you know, like I did three tight ends, three running backs, I think he was the guy who excited me the most, Justin.
You mentioned the word gritty, and the kind of two, even three big notes that I have on Dalton Keene. He makes guys miss with yards after the catch and broken tackles, and he's a high motor effort blocker. I think you used the word gritty. I think that ultimately very much lines up for what I also see about Dalton Keene. And it's not really rare in this class, but what is going to separate the lower end tight ends and the tight ends that are going to go a little bit earlier is I honestly do feel it's what you can do with the ball in your hands kind of after the catch. Obviously, blocking is something that is of high value, and a lot of my guys that I have on my list, they're very good blockers. But
Keene is never going to be like a George Kittle out on the edge, like tight end, a traditional tight end blocker. He's kind of has to have that running start, which I'm not like, I like that more, especially with what the Giants are looking for. But yeah, he doesn't have like the strength to just be out on the edge and block the best defensive end.
Well, right. That's why calling him like high motor and giving effort, you know, kind of similar, you know, why you're okay with, you know, if you look on the Giants, why you're okay with like Evan Engram lining up 12 personnel and lining up on the line of scrimmage. It's because he gives effort. He may not be the best blocker, but he gives effort and you're okay with that. Yards after the catch and broken tackles, that's something that is going to separate you in this tight end class. And I feel like in every single class where a lot of guys, mostly guys are just thumpers. And whenever they catch the ball, they're putting two hands on the football and they're waiting for somebody to come out and take out their ankles. Keene is one of those guys that can give you something after the catch and he can break some tackles and make some plays down the field. All right, so next on my list is Thaddeus Moss, tight end, LSU. Thaddeus Moss caught two touchdowns in the national championship, by the way. But Thaddeus Moss has a little bit of a complicated collegiate career. 2016, he was at North Carolina State as a freshman, but also, I'm kind of forgetting the biggest point. Thaddeus Moss is the son of Hall of Fame wide receiver Randy Moss. Little fun.
Straight cash, homie.
little fun tidbit. Not going to lie, partially why we're covering him, because he is Randy Moss's son, but I actually kind of like him, especially if you compare him to the other lower tier, lower end tight ends. I actually do kind of like him. So 2016, North Carolina State, he was a freshman, and he actually didn't even play until this year, 2019, at LSU. He transferred from North Carolina State, and then when he was actually eligible and ready to rock and roll and ready to play and for the 2018 season, he suffered a foot injury. And what I'm reading online is that it was like a fifth metatarsal injury. So do with that information as you may. I'm not a doctor. I've never heard of that injury.
Hey, Justin, you're not a doctor.
Thanks, Bobby Skinner. I'm not a doctor, so I don't know. I don't know how that injury and how, you know, the injury history might impact him down the road. But nevertheless, I liked what I saw. So in 2019, what Thaddeus Moss did is in 12 games, he had 47 catches, 570 yards, four touchdowns, two of which came in the national championship game. So my plus-plus category of Thaddeus Moss in 57 targets, he had 47 catches. He did not have a single drop, which is kind of awesome, very reliable in that regard. Above-average run blocker. Now, it's kind of unexpected. You wouldn't expect the son of Randy Moss, former Diva wide receiver, to be an above-average run blocker, and that actually is the best part of his game. But lo and behold, it definitely is. So don't let the wide receiver name fool you. He gets after it in the run game. And my regular plus category, he does a good job chipping edge rushers at the line of scrimmage. Wide frame, despite only being 6'2", it gives QBs a large window to throw to. And then in my negative, my minus category, injury history is present. He has a lack of athleticism. He does not excel at getting yards after the catch or broken tackles. Combine that with his lack of speed. It is clear that very much he benefited from a favorable scheme that didn't ask him to do too much to be productive. Usually how I'm like associating, if you don't have good yards after the catch numbers, or if you don't have good broken tackles numbers, you're typically kind of benefiting from a scheme, which is not a bad thing. I'm not going to make that a bad thing, but it's something that's just part of a guy's eval. Overall, high upside as a future tight end too, and a productive one. But unless he can work on the athleticism side of his game and maybe start making a little bit more contested catches down the field, then the upside that I see is a tight end too.
Justin, when you hear that is Randy Moss's son, you're thinking this guy's some kind of athletic freak, and you're thinking that he just doesn't block at all.
No.
It's the exact opposite, like you said. He doesn't really have the athleticism. And he's a really good run blocker. Like his strength, like you said, is his run blocking, which just blows you away because Randy Moss was an athletic freak who had like
some of the worst effort we've ever seen in the NFL from a star player. So he's like the exact opposite of his father. So yeah, it's kind of funny that he's actually a pretty good blocker, and he's not like at this athletic freak. But Justin, my last tight end, he's also from LSU. It's Steven Sullivan. He's 6'5", 248 pounds. He had a really good combine. I mean, a really good combine. A 4.66 40, a 36.5-inch vertical jump, 7.5-1-3 cone drill. Justin, I'm not big on Steven Sullivan. Now, he's got good hands in traffic and sideline feet. He's got good pop on his blocks, but he doesn't finish. Like, he gets a good pop on his blocks, but he just, like, he'll get on a guy, like, boom, one, and then that 1.5, the guy will throw him to the side, so he's not able to finish his blocks. I think LSU split him out wide a lot. Like, oh, you're going to be this athletic tight end that plays out at wide receiver. He just didn't look to fit there. He just doesn't look to fit there. And it's kind of a reminder of with Giants talk about Evan Engram. We're like, you might split him out wide and realize that that's not his position. So he didn't look great right there. He kind of reminds me of just a guy who's like, he's got all this potential. You have this stuff you love about him. I just don't think he'll ever pan out. Now, I'm not going to say he won't because he has the ability to do it. But like, he has lazy routes, and you know, he'll take a burst and make his cut. And if he doesn't think the ball is coming to him, he'll just start jogging. And I just don't see that fitting in. I don't see that being a guy the Giants would draft when they have Evan Engram, Caden Smith, and Levine Toilolo on their roster. Now, like I said, the athleticism gives you some hope if they were to bring him in, but it's just, are we going to harness that? So, and he didn't really produce much. His stats in his last season, he had 23 catches, or his junior year, he had 23 catches for 363 yards and 2 touchdowns. As a sophomore, he had 11 for 219 and 1 touchdown. Justin, I don't really like doing like player comparisons. I just want to say he reminded me of Jarrell Adams, not because like, oh, they're the same player, but of the hopes I had for Jarrell Adams. Because I was like, okay, he's got this good speed, he's got good size, he's got a good vertical, and it's just, it was just never meant to be, though.
I threw up on my mouth when you mentioned Jarrell Adams. Is that a bad thing?
For Jarrell Adams, it is.
Yeah, sucks to be him. Yeah, but Steven Sullivan, he slightly produced early in his LSU tenure as a wide receiver. And Bobby, I think that's the season that you referred to when he had 23 catches. Good straight line speed and has an ability to move up the seams. And that's going to be the reason why teams might have a little bit of hope in him. But again, he doesn't offer much as a blocker. Not really good after the catch. He had 14 targets all last season. So I was curious on why you might have picked this guy to cover, because there's just not much here. There is the potential. There will be a team that will take him because, you know, he had a good combine and he has that good straight line speed. He has it. He has that. You can check that off. But kind of similar to Evan Engram, why I feel like he didn't work as a wide receiver is because, and this is the same reason why Giants fans are like, oh, let's put Evan Engram a wide receiver. The reason why you can't put him at wide receiver is because it takes him a little while to fully get accelerated and fully get up to speed. You know, wide receivers, their first and their second steps, they're good. You know, they can get off the line quick, but it's not, you know, this guy is going to take until his third or his fourth step to really get into how fast and how fit and how fast he is as a runner. So that's why I feel like him putting him at wide receiver didn't work, but also him not being able to block as a tight end, that also kind of hinders him as well. So tough situation for Sullivan. I hope for the best. Hopefully you don't wind up like Jarrell Adams.
Yeah. All right, Justin, who's next on your list?
All right. This is my final guy with a fun name. Devin Asiasi, tight end from UCLA.
Spelled Asian S-I. Or Asia SI, not Asia.
Asia SI, yes. Luckily, I have found a very helpful and resourceful website that helps me with these names. he pretty much took on the starting reins of tight end this year for UCLA. 12 games, 44 catches, 641 yards, an impressive 14.6 yards per catch with a total of 4 touchdowns. So in my plus-plus category, throughout his entire career, he averaged 15.2 yards per catch during his collegiate career, which is pretty absurd, especially for a tight end. He has great athleticism and speed in space, long, big strides. If you watch on film, Bobby, long, big strides. He runs really aggressive when he gets going after his second step. He is a force in space where if you can get him going on the seam, secondary players are going to struggle bringing him down. He also only had one drop in 2019. So that was my plus-plus category. In my plus category, he gives solid effort when blocking, but still needs to work in that regard, especially with his angles in the run game. I saw some plays where all he needs to do is turn his backside to the ball carrier, and the block is made. Instead, he tried to muscle guys out of the way, standing laterally, not using leverage, and he got in trouble in that regard. Still gets good separation, drives his legs on film when it comes to his blocking. Now, I actually like his blocking a little bit more. I like his form and his technique a little bit more than some of the scouts do, so I want to put that as a note. But contested catches, broken tackles, yards after the catch, that means in my brain he does not solely rely on scheme for success and production. Over 200 snaps lining out in the slot in 2019, so has both experience putting his hands in the dirt, in and out of the dirt. For a UCLA offense, that was not very good at all. And Bobby, you have a running back on your list who exceeded pretty well despite a very, very bad UCLA offense. Anytime we can find a guy that excels with that crappy situation, they might be worth it because that UCLA offense was not very good. So in my minus category and some things that he needs to work on, Asiasi needs to work on, he has issues with weight. Certain websites had him at 270 pounds to start the season, yet at the combine, he weighed in at 257 pounds. If he can cut down on the weight a little bit more, I feel like he automatically becomes an even more of an athletic freak. He becomes a little bit faster, a little bit more quicker. I think that will only help him. He needs to work on that fluctuating weight as the season goes on. But overall, probably the guy that is most complete out of the three guys I have previewed because of his natural athletic ability. He's just not a thumper, and that is what distinguishes him for me.
All right, that's the tight end group.
No holds bad. He took me in the low post and won, but I think we had on the varsity.
All right, let's talk about the running backs. Justin, first on my list. Out of Memphis, Patrick Taylor Jr. He's 6'1", 217 pounds. At the combine, he ran a 4.57 40, a 34.5-inch vertical jump, 15 bench press reps, and a 4.34 shuttle. Justin, you know who Darnell Henderson is? He's the backup running back for the LA Rams. He was his backup in 2018. Well, Patrick Taylor, as a backup to Darnell Henderson, had 1,122 yards, 5.4 yards per carry, and 16 touchdowns, 17 catches, 197 yards, and 2 touchdowns. His 2019 season got cut short because of an ankle injury, so he only played 6 games, but he had 350 yards on 4.5 yards per carry and 5 touchdowns. His sophomore season, he had 866 yards on 5.5 yards per carry, 13 touchdowns. So he got a lot of touchdowns. He was a lot of fun to watch. He's a big guy who knows how to run behind his shoulder pads, and he'll beat on guys, and he'll fall forward, and that's for specifically the Giants what I'm looking for if they were going to take a late-round flyer on a running back. There's a guy who is going to beat on dudes and is always going to fall forward. I don't need some guy who's got speed but doesn't know how to find a hole and is tackled easily. Wayne Gallman is who I'm talking about. I want a guy who's going to beat on people, especially now that Deion Lewis is the backup running back. If it's third and three, Justin, he's getting the first down. He gets to his destination. He doesn't really have much horizontal ability. He's not going to bounce it and go, which is fine. Like I said, what we're looking for. He had like so many big plays because he finds the hole and he hit. Like I said, he knows where he wants to go quickly. So he finds this hole and he goes. And that led to a lot of touchdowns in a Memphis team that liked to run the ball a lot. Patrick Taylor Jr., he's someone, if the Giants were to take him with a 7th-round pick, even though it's not a position of need and you have your first string and your second string guy, he's a guy I get excited about.
Yeah, as a guy who's going to be picked a little bit later in the draft, you like his size. I feel like a ton of these running backs that we've tried to look at, you know, they've been guys that have been 5'8", 5'9". And sure, you know, it's kind of a good size for a running back if you want a guy that's going to fit between the tackles. But ideally, what you're looking at of a running back that you're going to be taking later in the draft is a guy that can be on the field during third down. And at 6'1", 220 pounds, Taylor is a guy that can handle those pass blocking duties. You know, obviously, I think he may need to work on his technique a little bit. He has kick coverage experience, which is key. If we're talking about guys that are going to be taken later in the draft. The only thing that I saw, and that may be a little bit of a weakness on my end, Bobby, is a guy who's 6'1", and a guy who runs and who runs very tall and doesn't really lower his shoulder, doesn't really get low, and doesn't really use his leverage in that regard when he has the ball in his hands. Guy that runs tall, that's a little bit of a concern on my end. But, you know, if he's going to be used as a third down back, if that's going to be a kind of a role, like let's just say if he's on the Giants, not really the biggest concern. So Patrick Taylor, pretty good ball player.
If Saquon goes down, having the 1-2 of Deion Lewis and Patrick Taylor makes me a lot more comfortable than Deion Lewis and Wayne Gallman. That's what I'll say about the guy. So I think he fits. I mean, he had a good combine. That with like I get the maybe doesn't get as low as people as you'd want him to, but he still runs dudes over. So you could say like, oh, Brandon Jacobs didn't get low enough, but it's like okay, but he freaking runs people over. So I probably like Patrick Taylor the most out of the three guys I'm going to talk about.
Speaking of a guy who runs people over, A.J. Dillon from Boston College, 6 foot, 250 pounds. I'll say it again. Bobby, did you hear that? 6 foot, 250 pounds. Holy moly guacamole, has he been a bell cow for Boston College the last 3 years? 2017, 300 carries. 2018, 227 carries. In 2019, 318 carries. And this year, playing in 12 games, it was his most productive season as a collegiate athlete with a little over 1,600 yards. He averaged 5.3 yards per carry, 13 touchdowns, didn't really do much work in the receiving game as he played 13 games his freshman year. And according to College Football Reference, he did not have a single catch. That's kind of wild. He finished with a total of 21 catches throughout his collegiate career. So didn't really do much in that regard. All right, so here what we got. We got in my plus-plus category. He consistently gets good yards after contact. It makes up for his lack of great burst and acceleration. Bobby, he moves piles. He can turn those 1 to 2 yard run stuffs into consistently average runs. Third and ones, fourth and ones, you can feel confident he's going to move the pile enough to move the chains. His legs never stop churning. For 250 pounds, Bobby, now you might have looked at his 40 time, but I want you to guess what his 40 time was.
4.53.
Wow, it's because you did know what his 40 time was, so you looked. So yes, I was hoping you didn't know, but yes. Wow, very very precise and exactly right.
It was a guess.
Wow.
I wasn't looking at it as I said it. I had seen it previously, so I'll give myself that. I got a good memory.
All right, good memory, yeah. 4.53 40, and the film backs this up. He's not going to burn anyone on the secondary level, but impressive speed for his size. Now we're going down to my plus category. He has good athletic ability for his size. He reads running lanes well. Arm tackles just will not bring him down. 40 career TDs at Boston College. Sure, TDs can be random stat, but when you're doing something right, if you scored 40 times in 35 games. Mostly ran outside zone and pitch plays at BC, which you wouldn't think of because of his size, but getting him out in space and getting momentum under his belt actually worked pretty well for him. I'll be interested to see how he can adapt to being drafted to a team that maybe uses more inside zone like most of the league does, besides a few exceptions. So, hey, if this guy can go to a team like Arizona or Minnesota, watch how fun that will be. But all right, so here, we're going to get down to my minus category, some things that I don't like, some things that maybe he needs to work on. So here's something that I don't like. Running back, 845 attempts in 3 years. He has been a bell cow for BC. Huge concern for me. I would almost rather have a running back who has 1 year of good proven experience instead of a guy who has taken such a huge beating throughout his entire collegiate career. And we know that BC, very run-heavy team, they've definitely used him. Overall, my pro comparison is Brandon Jacobs. Dillon is fun to watch, but he probably entered the league about a decade too late. Most likely, his skill set doesn't translate to what NFL teams need lower-tier running backs to do, besides be a short yardage specialist. But Bobby, regardless, this guy is really, really fun. He's really, really tough to bring down. He's really explosive for his size. 41-inch
vertical jump. At 250 pounds, the dude had a 41-inch vertical jump. That was the best out of all the running backs. If you just look at his combine numbers and his size, you're like, you got to draft him, right? He is one of those guys. If he gets on the team, he may end up averaging 3.2 yards per carry, but he's one of those guys you'll always have hope for because of his size and measurements. But like you said, he's got a lot of wear and tear on him.
Yeah, it's just a matter of this guy is literally entering the NFL about a decade too late. And, you know, call me a crappy football fan for hating on the running back position, but that's just my evaluation, so get over it. That was really mean. I apologize.
Next on my list is UCLA running back. He's 5'11", 212 pounds. Joshua Kelly, man. He ran a 4.49 40, a 31-inch vertical jump. So 212 pounds, 5'11", 10 less inches than A.J. Dillon. But I'm not knocking him. 23 bench press reps, which was pretty impressive. A 4.28 shuttle. In 2018, his junior, he had 1,243 yards on 5.5 yards per carry and 12 touchdowns. And this past season, he had 1,060 yards on 4.6 yards per carry and 12 touchdowns as well. He played D2. He was a D2 transfer, came over with Chip Kelly when Chip Kelly took the UCLA job. If you listen to him for 30, 45 seconds in an interview, he'll captivate you. He's one of those guys you could just tell, like, does everything right. Like, it just rubs off immediately. And Justin, you know me. I don't really care about that kind of stuff. Like, that kind of stuff, I'm like, I'm more of a talk is cheap. Let me see what you do, not what you say. But it just
BS.
His positivity.
BS. I'm interrupting you. You are so big on character and who you are as
character,
a person, like,
not,
off the field.
I am, but I'm saying what you say to the media is what I don't care about. But, like, just the way he speaks to the media, like, you just, his positivity and energy, like, just rubs off the right way. And I don't really fall for that. I talk about real character. Anyone could talk to the media and have great character. Anyways, like I said, he's a former D2 athlete. He's not going to break a ton of tackles. Like, you just don't see him break tackles, but he will run through you. You know what I'm saying? So we'll get that extra 2 yards by running through a guy. He's got a couple nice, like, moves like you would use on Madden. He's got a nice, like, jump cut and go. His 40 time is good, but he just doesn't look that electric in speed. Although he had some big runs and he would get there. He can get tripped up easily. And that kind of goes with not breaking a tackle. Like, if you get a hit on his leg, he'll fall. He'll come down. So, which is not really what you want out of a guy who isn't going to start right away. You want him to run through guys. But anyways, but he does have. It's part of it is from that, like, the head down mentality. Another guy with not a lot of horizontal ability, but like you said, that UCLA team was bad. It was in rough shape, and he made plays for them. I mean, he had over 1,000 yards, you know, 2 years in a row. You know, 4.6 yards per carry, 5.5 yards per carry both seasons, 12 touchdowns. Receiving touchdown last year. I like Joshua Kelly. I think he's a really cool dude. I would like to spend time with Joshua Kelly. I don't know if that means he's a good running back, but I like Joshua Kelly. Isn't Joshua Kelly a country singer, by the way?
I'm not very good with country today. I'm more of a 90s country guy.
Doesn't he sing the Georgia Clay song?
Oh, I have
just
no,
like
I have
that
no
Georgia Clay. It is. I freaking love that song. Just like that Georgia Clay.
So I wonder if there's any relation.
Everything. Nope, because the country guy's white and Josh Kelly's black. But we have to tell you that because he's a running back. And unless your name's Chris, unless you go to Stanford, you don't play. You're not there's no such thing as an NFL white running back. Shout out Toby Gerhardt.
Joshua Kelly. Yeah, fun to watch on a very bad UCLA offense with a weak offensive line. So definitely our buddy Asiasi benefited much better, because if you have a team that's passing the ball more often because you're losing, then Asiasi is going to benefit. But Joshua Kelly rose above the occasion with a bad offensive line. But if you're a running back, in my brain, if you're a running back that does not have any pass-catching abilities, you're just another running back who may be out of the league by age 27 for me. And if you don't do much to separate yourself, then I'm sorry. You're not going to pop off the page for me. And Joshua Kelly, while he was fun to watch, just doesn't pop off the page for me.
Screw you then, Justin. Who's next on your list?
Love this. I love this man. I am rooting for him. J.J. Taylor out of Arizona. And Bobby, I will fight you after this show. That's a drop. J.J. Taylor, 5'6". 180. Wait, first of all, I thought he was 5'8". College football reference has him at 5'6". I thought he was 5'8". Very much. Hey, let's just go with 5'6". It makes the Rudy story even that much better. 5'6", 185 pounds. He's 5'5".
Yeah, he measured at the combine at 5'5".
Oh, Lord. That's even better. so 5'5", J.J. Taylor out of Arizona. Starter for the last 3 years. But in 2019, he played 11 games, 148 attempts, 721 yards, 4.9 yards per carry, 5 touchdowns, 32 receptions, 289 yards as a receiver, 9 yards per reception, no receiving touchdowns. His best statistical rushing year was 2018, but I'm not going to really go through that. But his best statistical receiving year was 2019. So this is my plus-plus category. Coaches absolutely rave about my main man, J.J. Taylor. Now, it may seem like a cop-out to say this about a guy who was 5'5". He is 5'5". I have it in my notes, so it's official. Say this about a guy who was 5'5", but for a guy to have this much success for this long at the collegiate level, at that size, you better be well-coached and you better be coachable. So ball-catching ability and ability as a return man, 2 years of experience as a kick returner, that is why he is in my plus-plus category. Now, he does not run like he is 5'5", 185 pounds. He thinks in his brain that he's A.J. Dillon. Overall, he has good lower half strength. Now, just because he is small and just because he is small and you know he's at 185 pounds, Bobby, just doesn't mean that he is a pure speed and agility guy. Now, let's move down to my plus category. He is a pass catcher out of the backfield, utilizing multiple routes on the route tree, not just screens and checkdowns. From the fifth game to the final game of the 2019 season, Taylor had at least 3 catches in every single game, and 3 of those games he eclipsed 50 receiving yards. He will beat your average linebacker when running routes out of the backfield. That is a nightmare for teams. Taylor performed pretty well at the NFL Combine in late February, posting the second best time among running backs in the 20-yard shuttle run, the third best time of the 3-cone drill, while his 19 reps in the bench press were tied for 12th best. He was just outside the top 15 rushers in the 40-yard dash, vertical jump, and broad jump. Now, my minus side and the negative things, some things that he needs to work on, he's ultimately limited by scheme. He would definitely fit a Cliff Kingsbury offense that emphasizes the spread a bit more. He's obviously limited by his size, but I am rooting for him. This is a guy, lower end of the draft. He's a return guy. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. He thinks in his brain. He runs like he's A.J. Dillon. Not a guy that just relies on his speed and agility. So I'm rooting for him to work at the NFL level. If J.J. Taylor can work at the NFL level, that really does prove that anybody could be a running back in the NFL, which I think he can. I think it can work.
I don't like this point. Your narrative that you're pushing into every single player we talk about. All right, next. Maryland running back Javon Leak. He'll leak on you. 6'0", 6 foot, flat, 215 pounds. He ran a 4.65 40, 34.5-inch vertical. Justin, if we want to talk about guys with wear and tear,
nope.
Javon Leak ain't one of them. Last year, he had 102 carries. Maryland threw the ball like crazy. In 2018, he had 34 carries. In 2017, he had 9 carries. And on those 9 carries, he averaged 11 yards per carry. On those 34 carries, he averaged 9.1 yards per carry. But this last year for Maryland, he had 736 yards on 7.2 yards per carry, 8 touchdowns, 9 catches for 55 yards. Justin, he had 23 carries versus Indiana. And I want to, after this, I'm going to tell you all the number of carries he had in each game. And he was the starter. 3, 7, 8, 6, 5, 7, 7, 9, 9, 8, and then 10. He just didn't get the carries, so he never was able to get in rhythm. So he was kind of hit or miss. So he'd have a 70-yard touchdown and then 3 0-yard carries. You know the big plays obviously have a bigger impact on his yards per carries, but it's also like he was kind of boom or bust because he just was never able to get into a rhythm. That being said, he did take losses too often, and his legs are weak. It shows off that his legs are just not strong. But like I said, he has limited wear and tear, so it leaves a ton of potential for the guy. So he may be a guy you never hear about because he just didn't get the totes at Maryland, but he's got a lot of ability, and the fact that he doesn't have any wear and tear on. That being said, Justin, he is fumble city. I mean, he fumbles a lot, and he's a bad blocker. That's a coaches hate you kind of combo right there. You're a fumble city and you're a bad blocker. Tom Coughlin would probably murder this guy. That being said, he's got a lot of talent. Fix the fumbles. Maybe you and Daniel Jones could take a class together on fixing fumbles. And Saquon and can teach you how to block while he's learning how to block this offseason.
That was good. I laughed at the end there. That was good. Javon Leak, I'm still grossed out by the joke that you made that he's a leaker. That's just not a good vision on my brain.
Do you know how to gleek? Do you know
gleek?
How to gleek?
Is it a dance? Oh, God, that sounds...
No. It's like you Do like
nope,
a little spit
that
with
sounded,
your tongue, just like
nope,
more water.
That sounded like it was Talking Giants After Dark, whatever you were just doing right there.
No, it's Talking Giants 7th grade messing with your friends.
Whatever. Javon Leak, Maryland, big home run hitter. This is a guy that, you know, I love. If I'm pushing my narrative of a guy that can make big plays, but limited touches, my perfect running back. I'm joking. It's clear that I'm pushing a narrative. All right, final guy on my list. Final running back on my list. Actually, just found his stats today. I literally did my work on Benny LeMay from Charlotte. The Charlotte 49ers, I did my work on him about a week ago, and I did it without any stats because I just solely watched the film. Bobby Skinner was nice. What?
You know what? I did film work on a different Charlotte player. So Charlotte is lighting this draft up.
Go Charlotte 49ers. Benny LeMay, in 2019, 193 attempts, 1,072 yards, 5.6 yards per carry, 9 touchdowns, total of 19 catches, 242 yards, with 4 receiving touchdowns with an average of 12.7 yards per catch. He also was a receiving back in 2018, but 2018 was probably his best overall season. He had more yards, he had a little bit more attempts, more touchdowns, more catches, but 2019, he also had a pretty good season for a small school guy. So in my plus-plus category, Benny LeMay, Charlotte 49ers, short burst acceleration, good vision, and uses small size to fit into holes. Another running back who may be short, but is strong in his lower half and is not brought down very easily. Benny LeMay is 5'9", 215 pounds. I forgot to mention that. That is bad radio, bad podcasting. So once he is able to plant his foot in the ground and get going north and south, the acceleration is impressive. In my plus category, he made some flashy plays in the pass game. Soft hands is the term that scouts throw around, and the tape even shows him making catches, navigating the ball through various angles, and making catches in traffic down the field. Does a solid job working his way to the outside to the tackle and reaching the corner on outside zone plays. He has very good game tape against, well, not very good. He has good game tape against Clemson, which is very, very tough competition, as we all know. In my minus category, things that he needs to work on, hesitant as a runner at times, has the tendency to dance around at the line of scrimmage and not commit, so decisiveness is an issue, needs to develop more as a pass blocker and his hand placement if he wants to develop as more of a three-down back. But this isn't impossible to fix. He has the weight to be adequate here. Could use his weight and strength more to his advantage in terms of fighting for yards after contact. So at the pro level, he needs to show more aggression, lower the shoulder more as a runner, the lower man wins, and do not be susceptible to big hits, because if you don't lower your shoulder, if you run high, you're easily brought down, and that's not good. We like yards after contact. Go Benny LeMay, Charlotte 49ers.
I like A.J. Dillon the most out of your guys. I'm just going to say.
I like A.J. Dillon the least out of all these guys.
Well, see. Let's see. I'm going to remember the three running backs you talked about. And in 4 years from now, we're going to revisit this episode.
4 years from now?
Yeah, we're going to see. That's when you judge draft classes. That's what we're doing with our first half of these shows.
That is true.
Doing 2013 today. All right. We appreciate you guys. That's our tight end running back review. This Tuesday. We're going to be talking about edge/defensive line guys. This will be a top of the class heavy. We're going to do Chase Young, even though it's not realistic.
Yes, it is.
We got Kalavon Chasen. It's not that realistic. Yetur Gross-Matos, AJ Epinesa. We have all the top guys, Okora. So that'll be one with some other guys sprinkled in. We appreciate you guys. So until then, let's go Big Blue.